title is Playing Hide and Seek with God. And maybe the title seems a little frivolous, or maybe the topic concept seems frivolous. But in a sense, since the very dawn of history, that's what man has been doing. We've been playing hide and seek with God. And hopefully, when we hide, God seeks. As it was the first time. One of the most amazing elements of the sin that took place in the Garden of Eden is that after the sin, when man feels vulnerable, naked, Adam and Eve hear the sound of God's voice. In a previous year, I spent a lot more time discussing that. In the first source, it says, "Vayishma'u et kol Hashem Elokim mitalech b'gan l'ruach hayom, v'yitchabe ha'adam v'ishto mepnei Hashem Elokim b'toch etz hagan." Adam and Eve hear God, but they hide. The reason that they hide is very simple. They're embarrassed, they're humiliated, they feel very vulnerable. And I think that we sense that all of history would have been very different if instead of hiding from God's voice, they would have confronted it. Instead of merely being embarrassed, they would have asked for forgiveness. But it could well be that the punishment for hiding from God is the result of being separated from God. And I wonder whether the vulnerability and the nakedness that they feel and they suddenly are aware of is exclusively an expression of physically being without clothes, or is an expression of the spiritual state that they feel in at that point, just completely vulnerable. There are times that we feel very close to God. There are times that we feel very far from God. There are times in our lives as individuals and as a people that we feel the hand of God upon us. And there are times that we feel what we call hester panim, or God's hiding. I'm not going to try to explain or to deal with or to confront the problem of theodicy, the problem of trying to justify when bad things happen, or as sometimes is called, when bad things happen to good people. That's not what I'm going to try to talk about today. I'm going to talk about something which is slightly different. And that is trying to find God, even when we're far away. Those of us who are interested in the first topic, Rabbi Soloveitchik very succinctly said that for the believer, and I'm not talking about having a debate with an atheist, but for a believer, there are times that we feel God. And that causes complete affirmation. Those of us who are old enough, and I barely am, to remember the Six-Day War, there was this incredible sense that God, when I say barely was, I was in first grade. Okay. But I remember. Kennedy assassination, no. Other things, no. But that I remember. But there was a sense at that point that God is with us. On the other hand, there are times that we feel that God is hidden from us. The Torah tells us there is such a thing called Hester Panim. There is such a thing of God hiding. So for the religious Jew, we live on this seesaw. We live on this time where God is revealed. We live by this time where God is hiding. And we realize that both of them are true. As I said, atheists may look at things differently. In the second source, there's a verse which from Shir HaShirim, and the important thing will be a comment by the Gra. Let me read the verse. Dome dodi l'tzvi ul'ofer ha'ayalim hinei ze omeid achar kotlenu mashgiach min achalonot mitzitz min acharakim. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young hart. Behold, he stands behind our wall, gazing in the windows, looking through that lattice. The Vilna Gaon raised the question, what's the difference between mashgiach min achalonot versus mitzitz micharakim? What's the difference between God? Suddenly you realize that God is right there, looking through the window. You don't have to be like Yosef of old to see the image of his father in the window. There are times that we have this sense that God is right there looking upon us. But there's also times that it's not as obvious. And at those times, it's not that God is looking right at us, but he's peeking through the window. And what the Vilna Gaon was pointing out is that there's always, again, this is faith, that we feel that God is always looking upon us. The only question is it clear when we can somehow see some type of image looking at us? And I don't mean this in a physical sense, an image. I'll get to some anthropomorphisms later. But for right now, it's a sense that God is right there, although sometimes God is hidden, and we only sense him peeking through. But no matter what, we know that God is there. And this is something which the rabbis in the Midrash, here, if you want an anthropomorphism, maybe it doesn't get better than this, except for maybe the one I'll say later. The Midrash tells us that not only is God watching, or not only is God peeking, but sometimes God can't help himself, whatever that means, and can't help crying. One such event was during the Churban. Let's look at source 3. Boto sha'a nichnasu evim lehechal v'sarfu. At that moment, the enemies came in to the hechal and they burnt it. V'kevin shenisraf, and when it was burnt, amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, shuv ein li moshav ba'aretz. There's no place for me on earth. Esalek shechinati mimena, I will pull back the shechina, God's presence. Ve'elal l'mechoni harishon, I'll return back, really, to the heavens of heavens. Yilchav ashuv amalkami ad asher yashumu uvakshu panai. Boto sha'a, words bold, hayah Kadosh Baruch Hu boche v'omer. At that moment, God began to cry, and he said, Oy li, woe is to me. Ma asiti, what did I do? Hishreiti shechinati lamata, I caused my shechina to come below, bishvil Yisrael, for the Jewish people. V'chshav shechatu, chazerti l'makom yirishon. And now when they've sinned, I must return back to where I was originally. Chas v'shalom shayiti schok l'goyim ula'ag l'briot. God says, God forbid, I've become a joke in the eyes of the nations, something to be mocked at. Skipping a little bit, Amar la Makadosh Baruch Hu Machay Sharet, Bo v'nilecha niva tem v'nirabi v'iti ma'asu oivim bo. Come, let's go take a look at the temple after it's been destroyed. Halacha Kadosh Baruch Hu Machay Sharet Yirmiyahu lefanav, God and the angels and the prophet Yirmiyahu went. U'kevin sharak Kadosh Baruch Hu et Beit Hamikdash Amar v'vaday ze beiti v'ze menuchati shaboy oivim v'asu bo kitzanam. This is my house and this is my dwelling. And the enemies have done as they've wished. Boto sha'ah ya HaKadosh Baruch Hu boche v'omer, oy li al beiti, woe is to my house. Banai heichan hem, heichan otam, where are my children? Kohani, Hechonatam, where are the Kohanim? Ohavai, Hechonatam, those who I love, where are they? Ma'aseh lechem, but what can I do? Hitreiti bachem, I've warned you, v'lo chazartim b'tshuva, and you didn't change your ways. So as easy as it is to imagine for ourselves that God has left and God has abandoned us, and we sit in the darkness and we sit physically or spiritually naked and vulnerable, what the Medrash is telling us is the other side of the coin. That there's another partner in this relationship. And this other partner feels the same pain that we do. And for the Medrash to put these words and to say, as that we sit on the floor and we cry for the destruction, so does God in heaven sit and cry. So the issue of why the bad happens is not something which concerns me. It's that when things happen, or specifically, on a day like Tisha B'Av, how are we supposed to respond? This idea of God's hiding is expressed in the Midrash in really in a fascinating way. But in order to understand the Midrash, we need to go back a little bit. And when I speak of a seesaw, or I speak of hide and seek, there are much better metaphors. I think I made up a word, I wanted to call it the vicissitudinal experience. But if you don't like that, you can go back to the seesaw. But the rabbis used a different metaphor. And their metaphor was the moon. Because the moon is something which appears, gets larger and larger and larger, and then begins to disappear, and then it seems as if it's gone. And we realize that major Jewish holidays, Passover, Sukkot, or when the moon is full. And this experience of God being revealed and God being in hiding, the rabbi saw within it a relationship to the moon. And it could be that the waxing and the waning of the moon expresses something profound about God. And I say that on a communal level. And it could very well be that in terms of biological cycles, that on a private level between couples, there's a very similar experience that takes place, where there's times of intimacy and then there's times of separation. And of course, if you realize what I'm really asking then, during times of physical separation, what should be the feeling in the relationship? Should there still be a relationship at that point? And obviously there should. What happens during those times where God pulls away and we're not feeling that same type of intimacy? Does that mean at that point there's rejection? Does that mean at that point we look for a different God, as it were? A different partner? So this metaphor of the moon may be a much sharper metaphor. If you look at source number 4, which will be completely meaningless if you look at it out of context, which we will. So your homework will be to look at it in context. It says, this is from Sefer Bamidbar, Parshat Pinchas, Usi'ir izim achad lechatat lahashem, alolata tamid yaseh v'nisto. This is the sin offering, which is offered on Rosh Chodesh. All the other sin offerings are expressed differently. Sir izim, over here it says l'chatat l'Hashem, a sin offering for God. It doesn't say that by any of the others. All the others, the implication is that man has sinned, and man needs to bring a sin offering. But only by the offering Rosh Chodesh has it changed. I'd mentioned, I don't have to keep telling you what I've said in previous years, but I mentioned at least once that the idea of the sin offering of a goat, Chazal saw as being an expression of the sale of Yosef. Where they used a goat, where they used the blood of a goat. And the Rambam says that when it comes to holidays, when families are going to come together, before our family can come together, we need to bring a sin offering, we need to bring the offering of a goat, to make a tikkun for that act which caused families to come apart. But this is a different type of offering. Here it says, if God said, bring an offering for me, as if God had sinned. And lo and behold, that's how Rashi understands the verse. Look at source number 5. V'se'ir izim v'midrasho ba'agada amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu heviu kapara alai al shema'atiti et yareach. Bring an offering for me because I made the moon small. Now, you read this by itself, and it makes no sense. What do you mean? I made the moon small. This is a cycle. But the issue is that the smallness of the moon, or the disappearance of the moon, is a metaphor for the relationship with God, for those times that we don't see God, for those times that, as it were, that God is in hiding. And the way that our world works, we really do have times of revealing God. The holidays are lifnei Hashem, celebrated in front of God when the moon is full. And then there are the times that suddenly we feel all alone and we feel vulnerable and we don't see that revelation. And God is saying, I'm sorry for this. Which means, again, as the Midrash had previously said, that God is sitting and crying as we're crying. Over here, God is asking for forgiveness, as it were, for causing the world that at times that there is separateness or separation. But then again, it can't be differently. And again, I'm not going to now go into reasons for this. Tisha B'Av represents the time of separation. Tisha B'Av represents the time, and if you think about it even, when we get from the 17th of Tammuz and the 3 weeks, is a time where the moon gets smaller and smaller and smaller. It is a time not just physically where the moon gets smaller, it is a time leading up to Rosh Chodesh Av, where it's absolute, the moon has disappeared. But it's not just in terms of that metaphor. Here is the time that we feel more and more separate from God. Here is the time that we feel not just separate from God, it's different. We feel that God is separate from us. We feel that God is not here to help us. We don't feel as much hashkacha. If we have business dealings with non-Jews, we try to push it off. If we have to start a new endeavor, we try not to do it now. It's a time that we don't feel we can even say the words shehechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'kiyanu l'zman hazeh, which is a wonderful thing to say, that we're still alive for this time, because there's something about this time that we feel that God is not with us. Maybe now we understand that maybe God is not looking through the window, but we want to believe that God is still peeking. We want to believe that God is still looking. We want to believe that just as we're in pain, somehow the Shekhinah is in pain as well. Part of the prayer or the avodah on Tisha B'Av should be a prayer for the pain of the Shekhinah. That we say to ourselves, God is a parent in a dysfunctional relationship, and we're the ones who have made it dysfunctional. And God is a parent in this relationship, wants nothing more than to be able to reveal itself completely to the child and to be together with the child, and yet we have separation. But instead of just sitting here on the floor and feeling bad for ourselves, part of it is to understand that pain of the Shekhinah. Part of it is to understand the mocking that takes place. And when mocking takes place against Jews, we need to understand it's against Jews and God by extension. You know, just like the new anti-Semitism is now anti-Zionism, it all goes down to a core, and that core is the relationship with God in this world. And as long as the world is in such a way or such a condition whereby God is not completely manifest, we need to recognize that quote-unquote pain of the Shekhinah. Now, everything that I've said till now is contradicted by the following source, source number 6, which is actually a halacha. And you know, we have things called machshava, Jewish thought, Jewish philosophy, and we have halacha. And halacha is a very good arbiter to know what Judaism believes about something. We open up the Shulchan Aruch, and we're told in source number 6, Ein omrim tachanun b'tisha b'av ve'ein noflim al pneihim mishum d'mikri mo'ed. And when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we don't say tachanun, we don't fall down, because it's a holiday. Because it's called a holiday. Now the word mo'ed, we recognize from the mo'adim, chol ha-mo'ed, a mo'ed is an appointed time. The Mishnah Brura brings the proof text in source 7, Mishum demikri mo'ed, k'dechtiv kara alei mo'ed. And the verse that he quotes is a verse from Eicha. So that's a pretty good proof. Tisha B'Av is a mo'ed. Now there are problems with this proof, even if I just convinced you it was really good. First of all, if you look up the verse is underwhelming. Look at source number 8. Sila kol abirei Adonai b'kirbi kara alai mo'ed lishbor bachurai gat darach Adonai l'vtulat bat Yehuda. God has spurned all my mighty men in the midst of me. He's called an assembly, that's the word mo'ed, against me, to crush my young men. God has trodden as in a winepress the virgin daughter of Yehuda. Over here, the use of the word mo'ed is actually an assembly, a gathering. The gathering over here is to crush us and to destroy us. It's a little hard to convince me that based on this verse, Tisha B'Av, oh, it's a holiday. Look, it's called the mo'ed. That's taking a verse totally out of context and twisting it like a pretzel. But that's the Shulchan Aruch. So we have a little bit of attention. I'll spend the rest of the shiur trying to explain this tension. But first, a comment about the word mo'ed. The word mo'ed has two meanings. It means appointed something. It means a place of meeting, but it could be a place of meeting in terms of place or in terms of time. For example, in the Torah, there was a thing called the Ohel Mo'ed, the tent of meeting. There's also the Mo'ed, the Mo'adim, the holidays. By the way, both usages are in Eicha. I'll just show you one more verse, although again, if you want more homework, there are another 4 verses you can find. In source 9, Vayachmos kigan suko shichet mo'ado, he has broken down his booth as if it were a garden. Shikach Hashem mitzion mo'ed v'shabatz v'yina'atz b'za'am apo melech v'kohen. He has destroyed his place of the assembly. God has caused the appointed feast and Sabbath to be forgotten in Zion. So it's interesting, in this one verse, he uses mo'ed in both ways. Both as God has destroyed the holy place, and God has destroyed the appointed feasts and Shabbat. Which means on the basic level, unless we find a deeper level later, on the basic level this means it's very different to celebrate a holiday in the Beit HaMikdash than to celebrate the holiday in other places. The experience was different. The Lifnei Hashem was different. When you enter the Beit HaMikdash, you're celebrating at Lifnei Hashem. Actually, celebrating the Beit HaMikdash was a combination of the two types of Mo'ed, both the place and in time. And what we're told with the destruction is both have been destroyed. We find this idea of separation from God thematically, which as will manifest itself in terms of Moed, but we find it initially on a national level with the sin of the golden calf. Take a look at source number 10. I skipped the beginning. The beginning is God's opening bid. The opening bid, when he talks to Moshe, is these people are a stiff-necked people, Am Kishe Oreth, and I will annihilate them. Moshe prays. The prayer is accepted. We are not annihilated, but something else happens. What is it that happens? Separation. And by the way, that's the first hint to understand why Tisha B'Av should be a moed, should be celebrated, and why should we should find God despite all the terrible things that have happened. Because it means that God didn't destroy us, and we're still around. What was supposed to happen, we should have been destroyed, but instead, separation. Later on, the separation will manifest itself in terms of the destruction of a building. Rabbi Soloveitchik, also, if you have the new keynote that was published, he makes this point, I believe it was page 283. He says, the celebration or the realization on this, I mean, think about the irony. At which point did the Beit HaMikdash go up in flames? It was in the afternoon on Tisha B'Av. That's the point we get off the floor. That's the point that men put on their tefillin, and I'm going to come back to tefillin soon. That's the point where people, some people have a custom of cleaning the house. You know where that custom comes from. Because we also have another legend, which is a Yerushalmi, that Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av. But where does all of this hope come from? From one common denominator. And that is that God didn't destroy us. That God took his wrath out on a building. Which means if God took his wrath on a building, that's the punishment. The building is destroyed. But what's the flip side of this? We're still here. Page 283. 82, 83. Okay. This is after Moshe comes down. After we got the stay of execution, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lech Alei Mizeh Atava Am Asher Lita Meiretz Yitzrayim El Aretz Asher Nishbati Lavam Nitzok LeYakov LeMor LeZarachat Nena. God is still giving us the land of Israel. We're still around. God is still going to keep the promise to Avraham. V'Shalachti Lefanecha Malach, and I'm going to send in front of you an angel. By the way, that sounds great. We can use an angel today. An angel is going to come. What's the angel going to do? Listen, we could use an angel today. A couple other. Okay, you think I'm talking politics, so I'll stop. El Eretz Avad Chalavu Divash. And then we hear the negative. Ki lo ehele bikir b'cha, ki am kishe orifata. But I won't be in your midst. Sin, separation. Messenger, not me. Here's the distance. And it's interesting, God still comes back to the same line. Am kshe oref. You are a stiff-necked people. And I'm afraid you're going to do it again. How do I know that? He says it. Pen achelcha badarech. Maybe along the way you're going to do another silly thing. And they did, by the way. That was l'cheda meraglim. They did do another thing along the way. V'yishma amat ha-davar hazeh, hara hazeh, v'yit'ablu. V'lo shatu ish edyo alav. The people heard this, and they got rid of their jewelry. That's the simplest way of understanding this. V'yomer Hashem Moshe Moro b'nei Yisrael, atem am k'sheorif. God's still on that point, about us being stiff-necked. Apparently it's a theme. Skipping to verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Yenatzlu b'nei Yisrael et yam mehar chorev. They got rid of the luster that they received at Har Sinai. Now the next verse is interesting. Because what's Moshe's response? U'Moshe yikach et ha'ohel v'natal lo michutz l'machaneh. God has separated from the people, and now Moshe has separated from the people. Harchek min ha'machaneh v'karalo Ohel Moed. So here we have a different type of Ohel Moed, but this is a type that Moshe is going to meet with God. ויקום מבקש השם יצא אל מועד, השם מחוץ למחנה. ויקצית משה אוהל, יקום כל עם וניצו איש פתח אוהלו, והביטו אחרי משה עד בו אוהלה. And when Moshe got up, and he left the camp, and he headed to his tent, his ohel moed, which means, this is interesting, we've lost God in our midst, and now Moshe creates an ohel moed outside of the camp, a very different type of place of meeting. And the people watched Moshe go, and how do they watch? They watch his back as he leaves. I mean, I hope you realize this is foreshadowing for what's about to happen in the next couple of verses. But before I get there, let's take a look how the Gemara understood this. The Gemara in source number 11, Derash Rav Simai, Bishash Adim Yisrael Nasel Nishma, Bo Shishim Ribo Shamalchei Asharet, Bekol Echad Ve'echad Yisrael, Kashru Lo Shnei Ketarim. When the Jews said Nasel Nishma, when they confronted God, when they felt God right in front of them, they were all rewarded with crowns. They had crowns on their heads. Echad keneged naaseh ve'echad keneged nishma. V'kevin shechatu Yisrael, yordu mea ve'esrim ribo malchei chabala upirkum. 120,000 angels came. Sorry, 1,200,000 angels came and took away the crowns. And it quotes the same verse, they took away the glory or luster they had from Chorev. Amuv chamib rebi chanina b'chorev ta'anu b'chorev perku. They got it at Chorev and they lost it at Chorev. B'chorev ta'anu k'damran, as we said, b'chorev perku, d'chti ve'enu v'yatzlu b'nei Yisrael. Amrav Yochanan, v'kulan zacha Moshe v'natlan. And Moshe got all the luster, d'samachlei u'moshe yikach et ohel. The tent that Moshe put up is Moshe gathering all of the luster of all of Klal Yisrael. That's the tent. Look at source 12 at Rashi. Rashi writes, Shnei ketarim miziv hashchina. U'moshe yikach oto adei lashon acher et ohel. Lashon balu neiro v'hu haya kiran or panav. That was Moshe's face, which now you realize something. They could not see Moshe's face. Why could they not see Moshe's face? What? No, he had the mask on, so they couldn't see it. Why couldn't they see his face? Because it was just... But what could they see? They could see his back. That's exactly what it said before. When Moshe would walk there, they would see his back. But now we're learning that this is what Moshe's face, the glow that Moshe had, even though I will admit... The glow is only mentioned when Moshe came down the second time from the mountain after receiving the new Luchot, and this is mentioned after the first time. But the Gemara over here seems to imply that it's at this point he got the glow. That's what Rashi seems to say. So again, this is not my words. These are the words of Rashi. Afterwards, Moshe continues. And that's in source 14. Moshe now has his tent. He has forgiveness. But there's separation. V'yomer Moshe el Hashem. Moshe says to God, Rei ata omer elai ha'al et ha'am hazeh v'ata lo adatani et asher tishlachi mi v'ata amarti yedaticha v'shem v'gam atzachem b'einai. V'gam v'ata imna matzatechem b'einecha hodi'inu na et drachecha ve'edacha leman emtzachin ve'inecha, ure'i ki amcha ha'goy hazeh, ve'yomar p'na yechu ve'hinochoti lach, ve'yomar elav, v'ein p'necha hochim al ta'lum izeh. I'm not going to explain every word of what's said over here, but Moshe's trying to get somewhere. He's asking God for some kind of favor. Look at Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'yomar Hashem Moshe, Gamet Devar Zeh Shedivarta Eseh. I'll do what you're asking for. Ki Matzatachem Be'inai, V'adacha B'Shem. I like you. And I'll let you know by name. V'yomar Har'ini Nat Vodecha, show me your glory. V'yomar, God says, Ani Avir Kol Tavi Al Panecha, V'karati B'Shem Hashem Lefanecha, V'chadnanti asher achon v'chamti asher arachem, which is also being very difficult in terms of what exactly does he mean. V'yomer lo tuchal lerot et panai ki lo yir'eini adam b'chai. You can't see my face because you can't see me and live. V'yomer shem hinei makom iti v'natzavta al hatzur, I'll pass by the mountain, by the rock. V'yoba avur kvod di v'samti v'nikrat hatzur v'sakoti kapai alecha alavri. Bottom line, you can't see my face, you can see the back, and who knows what that means. The Gemara has a difference of opinion of what happened in that dialogue, and I will freely admit that that dialogue was particularly obscure. And I didn't try to translate it, because any translation is going to give a major interpretation, which we're not going to do. You can trust your English translations if you like. But let's look what the Gemara does with it. The Gemara has an argument. Source 15. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Yosef. Shloshat dvarim bikesh Moshe v'nei Kadosh Baruch Hu v'natan lo. Moshe made three requests, and he received them. Bikesh shetishra shechina Yisrael v'natan lo. He asked that the Shechina be upon Israel, and God acquiesced. And it quotes one of those verses. Bikesh shelo tishra shechina l'mot olam v'natan lo. And he asked that God's presence not rest on other peoples, other nations, and God acquiesced. Bikesh lahudil drachav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu v'natan lo. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Yossi, the third request was, God, show me how you do your spiritual accounting. Show me how you treat the world. Show me why certain things happen to some people and other things happen to other people. Explain to me why bad things happen to good people. Explain to me how you make decisions. That was the third request. According to the first opinion, God acquiesced. And I won't explain to you what it says. You can read ahead and see. The next paragraph, the Gemara says, Upliga de Rav Meir, but Rav Meir disagreed. The number of Meir, Shtaim Natnulo, Vachat Lo Natnulo. Moshe only got two of the requests. He did not get the third. God did not tell him about why bad things happen. God did not explain to him what happens, why bad things happen, how bad things happen, or what happens in heaven when bad things happen, that he wouldn't do. If you look at the bottom line in that Gemara, and God there says, when I wanted to reveal myself, you weren't prepared, now you want, I'm not prepared. And figure that out as well. Last line of the Gemara. Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, V'lamit Shehara Kadosh Baruch Hu L'moshe Kesher Shel Tefillin. This comes to teach us that God revealed to Moshe the Kesher Shel Tefillin. Now, this needs a little bit of explanation, but be patient because it's good. This was the moment when God said, sorry, this was the moment that Moshe said, show me your glory, and God said, no. God said, I will pass by the cleft of the rock. You can see my back, you can't see my face. So what did Moshe see when he saw God's back? So the Gemara is saying, what did he see? He saw the knot in the tefillin. Those of you who don't recognize this, you may very well say it once a week. Kesher tefillin hera la'anav. Yes? Tmunat Hashem leneged enav. He showed the knot of the tefillin. What does it mean, le'anav? Her'e le'anav, he showed. Moshe is the anav. The knot of the tefillin he showed to the modest one. Tmunat Hashem leneged enav. A picture or a vision of God in front of his eyes. But of course, we have one little problem. And what's that little problem? There's a metaphor. What's the metaphor? The metaphor is the knot of the tefillin. Why is the knot of the tefillin the metaphor which is employed over here? And to say that he sees, and to say that, correct, and to say that he sees the back of God and therefore he sees the knot of the tefillin is once again an incredible anthropomorphism, because it gives God a head and it gives God's tefillin and you see the back of tefillin. So this is something which we need to try to understand. And by the way, if you go back and look at Rashi's commentary to the Chumash, on the verse, V'ra'iti et acharai, you can see my back. You know what Rashi writes over there? Her'ehu kesher shel tefillin. Rashi, who tells us that he tells us the pshat of the... This is what Rashi feels is the pshat. So, it's not just the Gemara, as if it's just the Gemara. Rashi brings it, and let's try to understand it. If you look at source 16, which is very good because we're on the last page, I'm going to quote something from the Arizal. Arizal was one of the greatest Kabbalists. His Yahrzeit also was during the 9 days. Ad oto hadalid ila'a. He's talking, believe me, I took this out of context. Until this upper dalid, dalid meaning the letter dalid, kesher tefillin shel rosh sheba oref. It is the knot of the tefillin in the back by the back of the neck. V'zehu ki'am k'shei orefu. The reason that the tefillin, the knot of the tefillin on that particular place, is because we are a stiff-necked people. And we need therapy. And those of you who are upset that men wear tefillin and women don't, so now you can just simply say that men may need a little more therapy. And maybe are a little more stiff-necked. The Arizal indeed says that the knot of the tefillin are on the place where we are stiff-necked. The Arizal in another place, source 17, says something which is very relevant to this discussion. He nekret luz. It's actually the part of the body which is called the luz. V'amru Rabbeinu Zal and our rabbis have taught, etzem yesh ba'adam b'makom kesher tefillin. There's a place which is by the back of the neck where you tie the tefillin. She'enu mitrakev u'mimenu yitgadel haguf latid v'nekra luz. Ki ba'oto makom hidfuka le'a b'makom kesher shel tefillin. Now the thing about Leah here, I'm not getting into at all, but there's a whole thing about Leah and Rachel and the tefillin, which we're not going to talk about. You can look up the Arizal if you want to hear a lot more about that. But what I will say is that he's telling us that the place where the tefillin are made, the knot of the tefillin, the place where you put the knot, is the place which is stiff-necked, which is the place of immortality. He's quoting here a midrash that says that how does tchiyat hametim take place? Well, there's one part of the body which somehow, that's what he says here, some one part of the body which then God will grow the body back. If you believe in things like science and DNA, well then, maybe you can begin to understand this. The Midrash is saying that there's a thing called the Luz. The Luz is indestructible. The Luz is immortal. Now this is interesting, because the Jewish people are called an Am K'shei Oref. When we were called an Am K'shei Oref the first time, what do we think would happen? That we'd be destroyed immediately. What happens instead? Instead, we're not destroyed, but we have separation. And what does the separation cause? The separation causes for us an incredible feeling of vulnerability, and it causes tears for us. But the Medrash told us it also causes tears for God. Moshe wants to see the secret. How does God treat the world? And God won't show him, but he shows him the knot of the tefillin. That despite the fact that we're in Am K'shei Oref, in the exact same place, we will still be immortal. Am Yisrael Chai, and we will exist forever. There's a deeper point. Kabbalistic terminology is full of references to what's called the right and the left. The Talmud speaks as well that if you're going to discipline a child, and this does not mean physically. It says that you should push them away with the right, with the left hand, and pull them closer with the right hand. Which means if one disciplines somebody, it should be with the weaker hand, and always be able to pull them closer with the stronger hand. When we wear tefillin, you'll see that there are two straps coming down the front. One is the right side, one is the left side. One represents chesed, the right represents chesed, this stronger hand, and one represents din, punishment. Now it could be that if a parent one day hugs the kid and gives him presents, gets him his new iPod, iPad, whatever it may be, and the next day disciplines him and takes it away from him, that the child's going to think that the parent is schizophrenic. You make up your mind. Do you love me or do you hate me? And how many children have never had that thought? Only if they have really bad parents. The good parents will give them that thought. Because there are times that we can express our love to our children, and there are times that we express our frustration to our children. Our children theoretically bring us the greatest pleasure in our lives, and also cause us the greatest pain. Which means if you've had children and try to raise them, you may know a little bit what it's like to be God. But what's the secret? The secret is the right side and the left side are merged together by the knot. That's the from the back you realize that what you perceived from the front as being either this incredible amount of love when God is with us, or this incredible amount of pain when God punishes us and separates from us, and being a manifestation of God's schizophrenia, that the reality is they come from the same point. The reality is that when God punishes us, he loves us, and he says, just like the parent, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. And when you lock a kid in the room, you're peeking in the room to see how they are because you care about them. And that's what the grower was telling us, that God is peeking in through the lattices even when we don't notice. And even when we get our punishments, and even when we're sitting on the floor, and even when we feel pain, we have to realize the secret is the kesher of the tefillin. We have to realize it's that knot of the tefillin that both the right and the left come from the same source. And that source is right on top of the Am Ksher Oref, because we deserve punishment sometimes, but it's also on top of the Luz, that despite everything, we will be immortal. That even when God pulls away, he says, my angel will still be with you. That even during times of separation, God is still crying, and even times of separation, God is still peeking in. And that's something that we need to understand. You know, it's interesting. The tefillin themselves are supposed to be like crowns. I'm going to read to you a story, which you think has nothing to do with anything, but have a little bit to do with it. It's a story from Rav Nachman. It's called The Tainted Grain. The king once told his prime minister, who was also his good friend, "I see in the stars that everyone who eats from this year's grain harvest is going to go mad. What do you think we should do?" The prime minister suggested they should put aside a stock of good grain, so they would not have to eat from the tainted grain. "But it will be impossible to set aside enough grain for everyone," the king objected. "And if we put away a stock for just the two of us, we will be the only ones who are sane. Everyone else will be mad. And they will look at us and think that we're the ones who are mad." So he says, "No, we too will have to eat the grain, this year's grain. We will both put a sign on our heads, and I will look at your forehead, and you will look at mine. When we see the sign, at least we'll remember that we're crazy." You know, when you read this story, it sounds like a really nice story. And all the people quoting it have no idea what he's talking about. He's talking about the tefillin. Yolecha la'ot b'ininecha. There should be a sign between your eyes. When he talks of putting a sign on your head, he's saying that we live in a crazy world. But in this crazy world that we live, we need a sign. We need mitzvot. We need holiness. I'm going to say something which I'm not going to fully explain now. But when we have separation from God, we need more holiness. When we have separation, by virtue of, you know, let me say that in an easy way. In Israel, we have one day Yantiv. In Chutz La'aretz, you have 2 days Yantiv. We have more Kedushat Makom, so you need more Kedushat Hazman. Why? Because we need holiness. When we have the holiness of being right there in front of God, we don't need all kinds of other things. When we don't feel in front of God, then we find ourselves needing all kinds of things. I'm not going to explain this more than necessary now, but I will tell you, those of us, especially the ladies from Givat Zev, who've been learning the Sforno all year, have seen multiple examples of this, including the Sforno's claim that only after the Egel was destroyed did we need the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha. Beforehand, they didn't exist. Only afterwards we need the laws of kosher. Beforehand, it didn't exist. And there were a number of other examples. And if you think that's completely radical, his point is very simple, that we're in a world which is crazy, and when we've acted like the crazy people, we serve the Egel as well. We need a sign. And the sign is the tefillin. That's what Rav Nachman is saying. But the back of the tefillin, the back of the tefillin, the knot of the tefillin, represents what I've already told you. We should begin to understand, as I start to wrap up, is that the reality is that there's a balance in God. The balance is between the Midat Hadin and Midat Rachamim, or Chesed. Let's say Chesed. And even during the Chorban, and even during exile, Tisha B'Av has become an opportunity for having a rendezvous with God. Which means, let's think on the simplest level. Tisha B'Av is a holy day. We are blessed to feel that holiness. We feel the Kedusha. If we're able to shed a tear on Tisha B'Av, it means we're able to feel something what we're missing. And it means that therefore we've had a meeting point, a moed. We've had a meeting point, we had a rendezvous with God. It could very well be that this is what Aharon understood when he says in Source 18, Vayar Aharon, this is as the Egel's built, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav, Vayikra Aharon Vayomar, Chag LaHashem Machar. Tomorrow will be a holiday for God. And note the words that he uses. They ask, say lenu Elohim, right? Make for us a deity. He says, Chag LaHashem, Yudke Vavke. Again, I'm quoting from the Arizal, Source 18, where it's underlined, Vamnam Hasod HaNirmaz Bizeh, Kilo Egel Naseb Yudzain Betamuz of Yudzain Betamuz Nishtabru Aluchot, Vatira Kadish Boch Lav Holi Yom Tov, Vinimtsa Chichag La Hashem Machar Be'etzem, Umacharu La Acherzman. Which means the Navi says this will become a holiday, the fast of the fourth will become the Sason La Simcha. Aaron is saying this will be a holiday. But Aaron, again, according to the Arizal, saying he understands that something profoundly wrong has happened. There will be separation, but it's within that separation that we can still find God. Because we know God's secret. God is that parent who really doesn't want to punish the kid. But God is the parent who doesn't want to punish the kid, but does it anyway because he knows it's the right thing. Not the parent that backs down. God is the parent who knows he doesn't want to and does it anyway and sits and cries. Source, we won't look at all the other sources, but look at Source 22. This is a midrash, the Psikta. Amar Blevi b'chol chodesh v'chol chodesh ebekayitz b'kesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'itein l'Yisrael mo'ed. God wanted to give us a mo'ed every month of the summer. B'nisan natan lema pesach, b'iyar natan pesach katan. Nisan we have pesach, then we have pesach sheni. B'sivan natan ma'atzeret, we have chag shivot, atzeret. B'tamuz haya b'dato l'itein lehem mo'ed gadol. God wanted to, and the word is mo'ed, God wanted to give us a big holiday. I don't know how long the holiday was going to last. But it says, Va'asu lemeta egel b'tel tamuz va'av ve'elu. But once the holiday got canceled, we lost Tammuz, Av, and Elul. Apparently, there was supposed to be a holiday on Shivasa B'Tammuz. Could be that holiday was supposed to be a three-week holiday, leading from Shivasa B'Tammuz all the way through to Tisha B'Av. It's the only one that it calls Mo'ed Gadol, a huge holiday, a huge celebration. You know, at this juncture in history, at this point of the year, today, our lives really have been, and really are, a game of hide and seek, a game, if you want, a seesaw. We go through times of incredible, incredible joy. And I say this not just as individuals, as a people. And we've gone through times of unspeakable pain, an unspeakable catastrophe. And then we get the little microcosms of each. And this past year, I think it was on Yom Yerushalayim, it was in one of my son's schools, and they invited a guest speaker who was a son of one of the individuals who died trying to protect Gush Etzion. And he told the story of the fall of the Gush and the rise of the Gush. I don't think that there was an adult in the room that didn't have tears in their eyes just listening to coming back. But it's not just coming back to the Gush. It's coming back to Yerushalayim. But on a microcosm, every time a Nefesh B'Nefesh plane lands, it's the same thing. Every time somebody gets on the ground, kisses the ground, it's the same thing. And on the other hand, every time there's a terrorist attack, the murder of the Fogel family was horrible. And it causes the pain, a microcosm of the pain. But we live through both. We live through both, and let's be honest, most of the time, we're someplace in the middle. We ignore the really good and we ignore the really bad. And we exist someplace in the middle. But we sit on the floor in Tisha B'Av and we're told that it's a halacha, Shulchan Aruch wrote it, that this is a mo'ed, that this is a time that we can find God. And the only question is, which kind of mo'ed? And really what I wanted to get across is we have an ability of finding God when things are difficult. And maybe it's a very pessimistic view because we know it could have been worse. But the fact that we're still mourning for our temple means that we're still around. The fact that not only are we mourning for it, but we're mourning for it in Yerushalayim. We're mourning for it after we've witnessed the first part of Kibbutz Goliot take place, we realize that we are in fact very, very blessed. But that doesn't mean that we have the right to be satisfied. Because God told us, the Medrash said, that God wanted to make this into a big mo'ed. Look at the last source. And maybe these are the words that we need to say. Ata Takum, which is interesting. Because we're telling God, get up. Maybe the last anthropomorphism for the day, God is also on the floor. God is also sitting on the floor. Ata takum. Terachem tzion. Ki eit lechanana. Ki va mo'ed.